It sort of gets into you, the film. It's like, it's sort of like a little gem with a message, some sort of wisdom, and it operates depending on how and if you need to hear it. Those messages cut off everything else while we were shooting it. And we were kind of in the forest staying. I was actually staying in a little cabin, and William was staying in another little cabin, like up the road. I think we kind of both appreciated just sort of
being turning
our lives off for a little while, being in this experience. Uh-huh. So, and even later on, I was like, wow, there's lines in script that sort of stay with me even in my life. Yeah. And both of us actually have lost our parents subsequently. So there's this kind of aspect to it that might have prepared us somewhat for what was coming.
What drew you to Sabina, like at this point in your life, to be able to just give up and go off the grid and experience the character?
I've always sort of been in and out of the grid. So... My dad basically lived off-grid, so it was just an opportunity for me to get out. And I was in Australia when the proposal came through, in the city, actually, staying in Melbourne. So there was a sense of, you know, just this desire in any way just to get around trees. And sort of anecdotally, I had been walking in these botanical gardens, which is like the kind of central park of Melbourne. Every day I would go for a walk there while I'm in Melbourne. And I was telling someone, oh, be so great to make a movie, you know, set in this kind of gardening culture about a group of women that come together and kind of heal each other over a project like that. And then, just strangely enough, a week later in my inbox there was a script that came, the offer.
Sounds like you manifested that.
Who knows, there's some kind of magic to things. And I think maybe there's just kind of webs of people that are on the same wavelength. Kind of connect. So there was something kind of, you know, that seemed like the right thing to do. So I accepted, of course. And then, you know, it was Dabney Day. It was like a woman directing the film. So there was all of that kind of coincidence about it. And it was a very personal story to her, not directly biographical, but thematically. You know, I think some of us have a story or two that we need to tell. And we may not be, you know, like writers or filmmakers, but there's that one story that we need to tell. And I think for Dabney, this is definitely something that needed to come out of her into the world. And she's a really interesting person and has had a very interesting life. And this, it was wonderful to kind of collaborate in this very personal project.
And how did Dabney Day shape your approach to Sabina then?
I mean, she just approached it like a person who was passionate. So she would send us very long text messages each night about the following day. You know, she sort of had a very personal approach to how she was doing it. And the crew were kind of young. And there was a kind of very free feeling on set. It wasn't like a typical film in that sense. It felt a bit like an experiment.
I noticed when she returns to poetry throughout the film, was there a particular line or passage that helped shape your approach to her or stayed with you now?
Out of all those sort of those moments, I'm trying to think if there is one that stood out. Not specifically, but kind of they come to you sort of in moments sort of unexpectedly. You know, you remember like, oh, that's a line in the film. Oh, well, there's a line I really like. Don't look back. You're not going that way.
That was a good one.
And that was always, you know, like William, every time he opened his mouth, had something to say like that. And I was sort of processing it, and of course in reflection, you know, when you watch The Gardener, you realize he's not the gardener, she's the gardener. And that's sort of interesting that these are all kind of reflections that she's experiencing in her own mind. You know, if you watch the movie again, you'll see it kind of differently, or there's things, little bits in it that you might notice that you may not have noticed the first time.
It was interesting because when he showed up, and you know, your life, it felt more than coincidence, you know, and that relationship then opened up potentially for grief or part of healing. But in preemptively, I'm like, is this guy real? And then you convinced me that he was. Like, okay. So.
Yeah, that was interesting. We're like, well, is this thing going to play, like, if we took him out of it? Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the thing. And in the end, you have to kind of convince. It's got to be convincing. So you play it like he's there. Uh-huh. But I think you could take him out of those scenes and uh-huh. they could work as an internal dialogue.
Interesting. But did you see the connection with him create that grief part or part of your healing path?
Well, I think the grief is sort of interesting. You know, there's different aspects to it. There's the shock, a loss, and then there's living with this kind of a memory and a melancholy of something that's gone but still there. Mm-hmm. So I think he was there, maybe, I mean, you could look at it in different ways. Maybe he was a replacement of a relationship that right. was missing, right. you know, or he's just a voice mm-hmm. in her own soul. Mm-hmm. Why does he manifest as this very good-looking guy? Right. Why not? Right. Why not?
And that's exactly the way that I was seeing it. Is this metaphorically the husband that she lost, or is this something showing up in herself that she needs? And, you know, when you got to the point, you went back and the cabin was empty. I'm like, oh my gosh, you had convinced me that wasn't happening. Like,
it would be great if it was a romance. I remember, you know, telling Darby, like, it's got to be a romance. How can you, like, just disappear the guy at the end? He was very adamant that, no, this was all about one's relationship with oneself. Uh-huh. And yeah, it was interesting. We shot the end in different ways just to kind of explore how that could work. Mm. You know, because it's got to be, we're surprised at the end, but mm-hmm. maybe there's a version where she's not as surprised. Like, she knows that she was a man. She knows she was just having this thought.
I can see that, yeah.
But I like to think that she's having, you know, this really amazing dinner with the dog and the cat, and, you know, and uh-huh. and she's laughing at her own jokes, and, you know, I think it's great to relate to yourself in such a way where you can really enjoy your own company. I myself have taken time out, you know, since my dad passed away, actually, in his cabin, which is a bit like the cabin in The Thing. And you can get really lost in a space like that, especially uh-huh. when you're lost a little bit in the past, you know, it's like, it's a mystery to itself. And it's such a kind of, it's a luxury to have time like that. But it's so nice to just be free to feel, you know.
Seems like it was your own real healing journey.
Well, it all happened before some of these things happened.
Oh my gosh. You know?
Mm-hmm. But in a way, maybe it sort of allowed me to be able to process things that were going to happen. Mm-hmm. And allow myself to take time to be in an experience, and, you know, not trying to block it out or rush through it. And I think, well, I don't know about everybody else's temperament, but I like to kind of sort of daydream a bit.
That's nice.
I like to be able to sort of flow with things, and there's nothing like being outside or in nature in terms of just recalibrating one's system.
There was a line in there when Sabina sees something as dying and Walter William sees it as blooming. It really stuck out as, like, metaphorical. Mm-hmm. How those two states, you know, overlap. Did you experience her as moving through both of them simultaneous? Did that line, you know, resonate with you?
Well, I think about that now, like, you know, end of life stuff and people I know and love that are sort of getting to that point. And, you know, that's kind of bittersweet, isn't it? But there is mm-hmm. a kind of culmination of things, I guess. There's this big reflection where you kind of look back at it all. And I think that's a sort of a blooming too, because there's a wisdom that comes through, especially, I'm talking about end of life. I mean, there's different ways to look blooming. Mm-hmm. But one way of looking at it would be this culmination of things and experiences and inhabiting of oneself in a very concrete way mm-hmm. without attachment. Right. Instead of seeing people uh-huh. that are older, you know, right. for instance, or people that are aware of their mortality, or mm-hmm. there's a calibration, I think, as at the end of life, where it all sort of, like, it doesn't for everyone, but I'm sure even just the awareness of things.
Because an existential moment for her.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was always asking Dabney, is she dead at the end? Is that what's going on? but no, I don't think she is. I think she's healed, mm-hmm. you know. and taking that time out has healed her. And it does allow her to separate where she's going from where she's been, mm-hmm. and other people's stories from her own.
Well, right. And so when you say that, you know, it reminds me there were times where Sabina returns to control, wanting structure or planning, you know? Maybe that was part of her struggle with uncertainty.
Well, certainly. I mean, she sort of left her whole life behind, but she kind of brought it with her, didn't she, out there?
Yeah.
And so gradually, I think she's compelled outside, you know, she's been sort of in the boxes and the filing and the mental, you know, the projection of what she's trying to put out there, drag from whatever she's still carrying from what was there, to letting things grow in a more organic way without being, you know, the god in the situation, allowing things to happen magically. You know, you put your energy in and then you just sort of appreciate what happens, you know, the metaphor being the garden that grows.
Mm-hmm. It's visible how you created that transformation. I think it really showed up when she came back to the office and she connected differently with people, and she was holding her pride flowers, you know, and slowing down and actually noticing them. Did that feel central to her transformation to you?
It's certainly in the script. I mean, at the time, all that stuff in Montreal was shot while we were in Montreal, mm-hmm. you know, and actually we shot all of the forest stuff first. Mm. So it would have been interesting to shoot it in reverse, like to shoot, you know, the office stuff and then do the forest stuff, obviously, because that's the transformation. But sort of going backwards was fun. You know, we know what it means to be in a city and to be caught up in things. Yeah, it made one sort of want to go back to the forest.
Yeah, you're straight. You did forest first?
Yeah,
forest. And so in the boardroom scene, when she releases, like, control over the outcome, like, that's a pivotal moment towards the very end of the movie where, like, it doesn't even matter now, you know? And do you think that moment redefines what success meant for her?
Certainly. I think she had a taste of something else. And until you can extricate yourself from one scenario, it's kind of hard to imagine another one, you know, so you kind of have to do something else to know something else. And I think, yes, certainly at the end, she doesn't need any of these things that she felt defined her. And her, I think, having experienced sort of peace and relaxation, she prioritized that over, you know, her ability to kind of impose her will on reality.
I mean, that was such a development because she was programmed this way. She was raised with it. As it shows up, it wasn't all at once. You're like, oh, okay, this isn't just hers. This came from her father. And oh, this wasn't just her father's, it was her grandfather's. Like, this provider that she had, like this doctor, these people, they've been in her life, like her entire life. She's super grounded to this. And to relinquish that in what we might assume she was in her 50s or thereabouts, you know, dealing with life or legacy again, you know, it's like, this is ingrained. This is a huge decision.
I mean, I think it's very relatable too, because a lot of people kind of hit that point or hitting that point and are questioning, like, okay, what direction? A lot of people, you know, it's just this sort of maybe, you know, retirement. What is that? Mm-hmm. What does that mean to a person if your whole identity is wrapped up in what you've been doing? And in a way, doing those things keeps you going if that is where your passion is. But if it's just sort of an external, I mean, I don't want to preach because everything's so personal, isn't it? But I think the message more is that make sure it is personal. You know, make sure it's not coming from society or outside of yourself and a habit that you're just sort of a slave to. Even if it has that deep, deep meaning or that deep, deep sense of identity, you know, in terms of, say, we're talking about legacy here. And it's hard to sort of unwind, where do I begin and where do they begin? Where do they end? Because everything's sort of enmeshed with identity, isn't it? But it's interesting just to sort of reflect and have a look at that. And I guess the legacy is just the wisdom that you inherit. It doesn't have to be the place or the business. It can be the life lessons that you imbibed. It doesn't have to be a physical thing or, you know, in this case, a business. There's still an inheritance there, and it can be more of a psychic inheritance, something that you can carry with you, and then you find yourself outside of that as well.
Yeah, pretty profound. So what do you hope audiences carry with them after watching?
I hope that, you know, I think the message, there's messages in the film that, and it doesn't sort of shy away from being a movie with messages. Uh-huh. You know, it's got little gems in it. And I think people of different generations will receive different aspects of it. But I think it's a gentle film and it allows you to kind of reflect whilst you're watching it. And in a way, it's kind of like a handbook, like, hey, here's the how-to.
Mm. We need more of those.
How to get out of what you feel, where you feel stuck, mm-hmm. and try these steps. I mean, however they seem appropriate to you. And I think the basics would be just get out of the system for a minute, be in nature and really listen to whatever voice inside you is calling you.
I love that you mentioned earlier about how your father lived off the grid and how that kind of almost paralleled that moment within the film and how you related to it.
Yeah. Yeah, all of that seemed very kind of, there was sort of synchronicity about that. Mm-hmm. And when I've stayed in his place and like I've felt, wow, I feel a bit remote, you know, doing this. But he had that, I mean, he was no saint, so he had issues himself, but I think he was able to kind of live freely. When I think about him, I think of like spiritual freedom, actually.
Wow. And autonomy. And that was a different time. I mean, people trying to do that in now, because the movie was based on the present, you know, and how you can really extricate, you know, and maybe time warp, you know?
Definitely time warp. Definitely. I mean, you can stop time, mm-hmm. I think, if you get off your phone. And it's hard to get off your phone. We're so connected to this sort of digital reality. But when you notice, you can also connect to things like birds, like in the film, you know.
Right.
You can connect to trees, mm-hmm. and there's a real kind of rapport that once you pay attention, you can experience. And I think just the silences can be quite intense, scary for people, but also it can really reorient you if you're feeling a bit disoriented. But by facing that, sort of what could feel like a void, and seeing that there's other ways of connecting to things, you know, basically connecting through paying attention to nature, paying attention to the light, the sun's up, when the sun is going down, the rhythms of things.
Like
things
an artist. That are
real. Like an artist, yeah. And also the real things that are really happening outside of the conversation, you know, outside of the talking, there's the rhythms of the world, you know, and your own physical kind of relationship with those rhythms.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you mentioned physical. There was really a transformation, not only energetically and how she related to people and, you know, how her changes or her cognition shift, but also there was a moment where she looked like she had visibly changed into a different person. And you really were able to embody that and show, you know, physically, externally.
Yeah, I mean, you do all that with the help of professionals. Yeah, and it's funny because, yes, obviously the story's about transformation, but I think I was just in the moments of it, you know, just in the moments of it, and they were a transformation. I didn't really have to focus on showing a transformation because it was a transformation.
And she talks about directly about fear and life and that whole, again, that existential.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some of it, I was like, gee, this is this is a lot.
Do you think that was like the turning point to her awareness, where, you know, another part of shifting? There was multiple shiftings, right?
What does he say at the end of that? She's talking about this fear that's always there, you know, this anxiety of, you know, it's sort of irrational almost.
Right.
And he says something about it. I forget what he says. I don't know if you remember.
I feel like he provided her some grounding, you know, a reframing. Right. Recognizing the resistance or the regression. It was interesting, like after the fact, to rewatch it in my mind and go, OK, that moment when she was mad at him because he was not keeping a straight line. He was not listening to her authoritism, you know, and then go, wait a minute, she was doing that to herself, you know? How did that play out?
You have to watch the movie again and think of it that way. Right. So who was she talking to? Well, maybe she was like, I'm going to do this and it's going to be like that.
Right, right.
And then when she gets back, it just didn't turn quite out.
Yeah, she's like, I forgot I did that. What the heck, right?
Or she just wasn't able to do it the way she imagined she was going to do it. And so it was the way that it was.
Right.
And that's like my approach to gardening and cooking. You know, I like to not follow a recipe.
Uh-huh. I feel you.
I just like to just sort of see what happens.
Organically, intuitively.
Yeah, there's like sort of plants in my garden that have sort of showed up by themselves and they just decided that's where they want to be. And
I love that.
Well, that's great. I like you there. And also things that kind of grow better where they want to be, you know, rather than like forcing them to grow in some spot where they might not fit, you know? So I relate to that, but I also totally relate to trying, you know, getting confused and trying to do schedules like 3 years in advance. I understand this feeling of wanting to bring, you know, the chaos into order. But my most happy moments are, you know, like, you know, this feeling of traveling where you're like just witnessing and enjoying and not trying to kind of manipulate the scene.
Right. I think that goes back to your statement of just non-attachment, you know, and just allowing things to be.
Very much. Yeah, allowing things to be and still putting your effort in. Like, you know, you can see she's working in that garden, you know, she's making effort, you know, making the effort and appreciating things the way they are at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely sounds like, you know, a lot of your influence came from growing up with your father and your mother and what they provided spiritually and naturally and how that shows up in this piece even, you know?
Yeah, no, I think it was a good fit. Like, I wasn't against any of the ideas. I wasn't opposed to them. Uh-huh. And I don't, you know, I'm kind of like, well, who wants to hear this? I think a lot of people can appreciate it, you know, and it's a nice reminder. There's so many competitive messages that you get, you know, there's a lot of dark messages that come and it's very compelling and it's not irrelevant to explore those intensities. I kind of think you've sometimes got to be responsible for your own psychology and filter things out and just pay attention to beauty or positivity because we're creating the world that we're living in, you know, and if we're constantly focused on in negativity, then that's the world we're making.
Well, it sounds like bringing things back to the present and being mindful is what I'm hearing in that.
Definitely. Yeah. Bringing things back to the present.
Well, I really appreciate your time. Is there anything that we may not have covered that you'd want to share as a final thought?
No, I appreciate your time. And I'm glad that you watched it attentively. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's really great to hear.
Well, it was really meaningful conversation for me. And I'm super excited to share your piece.